Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. This is Ken, the Passion Entrepreneur, your Chief Profitability Officer, your Profit Evangelist, if you will. Thanks again for listening in. We show you how to maximize your profits and business opportunities. We teach you the best practices for profitability and share with you new ideas and strategies to take your business to the next level. We want you to listen, learn, enjoy, and share. You listen to E3C Radio. The call-in number is 646-716-716. 7099. Our topic today is how to build a flourishing business. We have Elizabeth Gordon. She's a pioneer. She's been called the feminine approach to building and running a business. Her distinct forward-thinking message has enlightened businessmen and women around the world. She is author of The Czech Entrepreneur, Put Your Business in Higher Heels. Let me check, see if I got my high heels on today. Anyway, her business strategy book is For Women, introduces Elizabeth's unique nine-dimension methodology for creating a successful business and teaches how entrepreneurs can supercharge their business growth using SaaS and style. I like that. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, then. I really enjoy having you on the show. How high do my heels have to be?
How about 4, 5, 6 inches? I don't know. How high can you go?
Can I work on the pumps first? Do the pump. Is the pump like
You know, the high heels is really just an analogy. It's not to be taken literally, of course.
But it's the idea
of giving, you know, your business a lift. We want that revenue line to be pointed upward, right? So
Absolutely.
Giving a business the lift to make that happen.
Okay, let me just get into some questions, because the title is Flourishing Business, How to Build a Flourishing Business. So why did you decide to start your company?
Well, I had been doing consulting in corporate America for quite some time and worked with lots of different companies, big and small, but I realized that I wasn't really passionate about the kind of work I was doing. And I started taking a couple entrepreneurial projects on the side, and I just loved working with entrepreneurs. You know, they have such a passion for their business. It's very different than working in a large company. So I started doing strategy consulting work for some of my friends, and I realized this was what I really was meant to do. So even though I didn't have any big clients and not much of a safety net, I decided to take the leap and do what entrepreneurs do, right? Kind of take a leap of faith and start my own practice.
Well, yeah, that's it. If sometimes when you're sitting in the cubicle or your office, and you're saying, "Is this what I'm here for? You know, what is my passion?" And you start working with people, and you find that you really like this, and the light comes on, and say, "This is my passion. I want to help entrepreneurs and business owners, you know, flourish in their
business." Absolutely. I mean,
I'm
a big believer that you do what you do best when you're having fun and when you're using
Absolutely.
The skills that are unique to you. So now I help other people find that same thing for themselves.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you, you've got this unique approach. You call it it's nine steps?
It's actually really kind of nine dimensions. They're not necessarily linear steps, like do this first, do this second. It's more of a picture, a way to view how an organization should look in order for it to be sustainable and functioning at its optimum capacity.
Now, I said nine steps. You said dimension. What's the You said it's a nine-dimension methodology. What makes this so unique?
I think what makes it unique is if you can picture in your head how kind of a classic business hierarchy, right? So you've got the president and the CEO on the top of the food chain in a little box, and then you've got, you know, the first line of management underneath them, and then another line of management underneath them, and everybody's got their little box that they're sitting in. Or you've probably seen pictures of businesses depicted in silos, right? We've got the finance function, and they sit on this side, and then the marketing folks are here, and then the sales guys are here, and a lot of times these people don't talk to each other across functional lines.
Done that, got the T-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. We've all seen the symptoms of setting up an organization that way and some of the problems that it leads to and the lack of unity, the lack of communication. So that's the idea of taking a very linear approach, and that's kind of a traditional hierarchy, the way that businesses were built. And that actually came out of when companies started organizing themselves that way, came after the way that the army was organized. So in a military organization, obviously it's really important to have the commander on top and leading the way. But in a business, sometimes that doesn't make as much sense. So I think what makes this unique is that it takes a more unified approach. It's really about making the organization cohesive so that all of these nine dimensions, if you will, are touching each other, and they're all impacting each other. They're all aware of what's going on, and what ties them all together is that centerpiece, which is the organization's unique value to the marketplace, because that's really the foundation of the company. That's what it's built upon. And if you start adding functional areas that aren't directly attached to that unique value to the marketplace, that's where you get, you know, needless overhead and functions that are not performing at their optimum efficiency and effectiveness. So that's why this has been kind of termed a feminine approach. If you notice, actually, I don't know if you can see, but the way that this is depicted, the shape actually comes out in the form of a flower. So obviously that has a little bit of a feminine type of a feel to it. So you've got the center with the unique value, and then eight petals coming off of that, four that are really your foundation, that's your strategy, your cash flow, and your customers and your employees, and that's really what your business is made up of. And then you augment those functions by adding in your sales and marketing, your processes and your operations, your partners and outsourcing, and then your planning and your measurement. So you don't actually do these in a linear order. Like I said, it's not like first do this, second do this. You need to do all of them in kind of a cohesive and simultaneous manner. But you need to have that picture in your mind when you think of what does my company really need to be sustainable and successful.
So how does vision and mission of your business come into play here? And I've got another question, but I want to vision and mission, does that help you focus on?
Sure. I think of that as kind of a strategy because those are sort of, you know, those one sentence or one paragraph summaries of what your core strategy is. What are you really here to do? And the key is the focus strategy. I mean, you can have strategy discussions, and I'm sure you've probably been in some of them. I know I have, where, you know, the talk is like, we're going to conquer the world, and we're going to do this, and we could do this, and also we've got this going on, and they're a little all over the place. And especially when you're a small business, it's of the utmost importance to really focus and narrow that down. Pick one niche that you're really the best at. So I think that idea of finding what you're really best at and building a foundation on that area, and then understanding that you can expand out from there. So I think the key with the vision and the mission in those early stages is really the focus and the narrowing of the niche and saying, this is the area that we can really dominate, because you don't want to just be another me too. Oh, we kind of, you know, we do the same as company XYZ, or we do it a little cheaper, or something like that. That's the kiss of death. You want to be really unique, and you want to be really narrowly focused.
That's right. As when I work with my clients, I always ask them, I say, you need to have 10 ways in which your business is unique. 10 ways in which you're unique. And sometimes, it could be overkill, but you've got to be able to say, I'm unique. This is the reason why you should buy from me. Will be my client.
Absolutely. That's a really smart.
Yeah. You've done this. So what success stories could you offer to the listeners about this unique strategy and how you've helped companies?
Oh, gosh. There's tons of stories that I could tell. Some of the clients that I've started with have really been very scattered. And I think that that's natural for an entrepreneur because entrepreneurs. Well, and we tend to be, visionary people,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
We're creators and we're creative people, and we do have big dreams and ambitions. So sometimes it's really important to narrow that. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't do all of those big dreams that you have. I mean, I've worked with a software company in Atlanta that had a very aggressive business plan, but in the execution, it became apparent that they weren't going to be able to accomplish all of that, in year one and year two, like the financial projections initially depicted. And so before this company started talking to investors, it was really important for them to back off on that because investors are smart enough business people to realize this. They know you can't conquer the world all in one day. So if you give them a business plan that says you're going to do that, they're going to be very skeptical. So we were able to really narrow down what their initial focus area was and also put in place a sales strategy that was going to allow them to reach their goals. Initially, they talked about hiring an internal sales team. And hiring an internal sales staff for a software company is very expensive.
Right.
If you know any software sales reps, I mean, these people make pretty good money. You got to pay them pretty well. And the problem is that software normally has a very long sales cycle. So you could be sitting on somebody that's on your payroll for 9 months, 12 months before you ever get a sale out of them. And it's not that they're a bad salesperson. It's just the nature of the beast. So the idea that we came up with was, why don't we use other sales folks? Why don't we use value-added resellers as the sales force instead? And partner with other companies and leverage their sales team, pay them the commission, incentivize their sales force to keep this product and service in mind when it's a natural fit that dovetails with what else they are selling. And that was extremely effective and a lot more cost-friendly for a startup company than the alternative. So that's just a little taste of some of the things that we help companies think through. A lot of times people have great ideas, but they fall down on the execution of it. So making sure that their idea really is going to be executable and then helping them actually to execute it.
So what I hear you saying is that a company that is successful must first focus on one thing that they're very, very good at and then outsource the rest stuff. And sometimes outsourcing gets a bad name. I've had experience in the HR outsourcing world. I actually sold HR services, and so I'm privy to. Yeah, I think that's a good thing. You should focus on what you do best and outsource the rest. And so this is really unique that you promote that. And okay, so what I understand that you have a monthly forum for entrepreneurs, Flourishing.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
The Flourishing Forum. About over 2 years ago, I came up with this idea, and it's really grown and become a regular meeting for a lot of up-and-coming entrepreneurs in Atlanta. Every month we meet at the Georgian Club, and we'll have a speaker come in and talk about a key area that's really important to entrepreneurs and introduce them to somebody that they might not otherwise have had the chance to meet, somebody who can really offer them some good advice and insight and tips into growing their business. And obviously, there's some networking opportunities as well as you're meeting other entrepreneurs in the city and getting some good contacts as well. So I did this because I had started networking a lot when I started my company. I mean, you know, word of mouth is a great way to build a reputation. But I got frustrated with going to networking meetings where all you did was trade business cards to people and hear their sales pitch.
Absolutely. And, you really don't build a connection with people when you just pass them the card. You're trying to get them to sell your product or service, or you're trying to sell to them, and that doesn't work.
Right, exactly. It's, you know, everybody's in sales mode, and it's just like push, push, push. And you also don't leave with any real good, solid content information. And as you know, I'm big into education, and I mean, I love to learn. I love to read, and that's part of why I wrote my book. I love to teach. So I wanted to create something where people could get the benefit of a learning experience as well as a networking experience. So at the end of the meeting, you leave and you've got great ideas, you've learned a lot, you know, your mind is open and expanded, and you've also met people. Why not kill two birds with one stone?
Well, we're talking with Elizabeth Gordon, How to Build a Flourishing Business. She's the author of The Chick Entrepreneur, Put Your Business in Higher Heels. Elizabeth, let's talk about Brian Tracy. This is interesting. He said that your book was a proven formula for thinking and acting to build a fast-growing, profitable business. I love that word, profitable. In any market. So what is common problems that the business owners face? Is it just the focus on the business? Is that
that's certainly one of them. I think one of the other ones is cash flow. Cash flow is tough, and it's tough to manage, and that's essentially what kills most people in the end, right? When you find out somebody went out of business, there's usually only one reason for that. They ran out of money.
Okay, so how do you improve cash flow?
So you need to look at multiple streams of cash flow, first of all, and building a foundation that is going to lead to sustainable cash flow and predictable cash flow on a monthly basis, and make sure that you really have a handle on how much is coming in and what's going out. Sales and cash flow are not the same thing. So there's a lot of different cash flow strategies that I talk about in the book that you can speed up your cash flow, offer people incentives for paying, you know, upfront. I talk about the idea that, you know, why do so many people invoice after their services are performed or after their product is received? You know, you go to the grocery store, and if you want to leave with your food, you got to give them the money right then and there. So
absolutely.
Why don't we all charge in a similar way? I mean, there's nothing wrong with charging people up front, collecting your payment then. And I think some people are just too timid to ask or think, well, what if they say no? Well, what if they do? Then you've entered a negotiation conversation. You know, big deal, but you might as well lead with a pricing strategy and a payment strategy that's to your advantage. And then the flip side of that is slow down your cash flow out. And when people want your business, if you're hiring on somebody to do some work for you, or you're going to buy some product or inventory to sell, they want you to have it, right? You're the customer, and so you're in a power position. And it's a really important thing to think about, well, how can I pay them the slowest way possible? Maybe I can get 90-day terms. Maybe you can get 6-month terms. It's amazing the negotiation power that people have that they don't realize, that they don't tap into. If a business wants your business, you oftentimes can get a really good deal out of them. Now, I'm not saying you can slash and crash the price, but if they're a company that's, you know, if cash flow is less of an issue for them, you can certainly put off paying them until you've started reaping some of the cash flow benefits of doing business with them in the first place and put yourself in a much more positive position.
So this is what I hear you saying, is that get your money when the sale's done, quickly and then slow off on paying bills on the back end. Okay. Let's talk about
That's
the book.
That's an easy way.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's talk about the book, The Chick Entrepreneur.
Actually, it's
What's
chic.
The premise behind that?
Pronounced.
I said I'm pronouncing it again correctly, huh?
A lot of people make that mistake.
Okay. So, correct me. What is
the
title of
the chic entrepreneur.
I said chick, didn't I?
Yes.
Yeah,
that would be if there was
chic.
A K.
Oh, my goodness. Boy, we're going to have to start this interview all over again.
No.
Right, so.
I mean, it's funny.
Oh, man. Okay.
Obviously, it's a book that's geared towards women. And I think that's a lot of times why people think, oh, it's a chick entrepreneur. But actually, you know, the word chic essentially means style. And so the idea of succeeding with a little bit of style. If you look at the business book section, and I actually just posted something on my blog about this last night, most business books, you know, they've got some kind of drab, dry cover. Maybe it's brown or black. You know, it's just words. And a lot of times the material and the content is a little bit dry as well. I don't know if you've found that to be the case in an occasional read, but sometimes these books can be a little bit heady. And a lot of times it's hard to get the full message out of them just because they're not all that entertaining. They've got great information, but it's not necessarily presented in a fun and easy-to-digest format. And so I just think that that doesn't have to be the case. Business doesn't have to be boring. It's really fun and interesting and fascinating. As you know, there's so many wonderful stories and interesting things that people do. And so what my idea with Chic Entrepreneur was really, how do we present business content in a stylish and fun way, in a way that appeals directly to women? Because women like to read books that are fun and funny and interesting and have stories and characters and that type of thing. It allows them really to intellectualize the material on a different level and really more on an emotional level. And that's how women tend to learn, is more on that storytelling emotional level. So the idea behind the book is presenting really solid strategic business content in a fun, funny kind of a way. So that's what we did with The Chic Entrepreneur. And the high heels on the cover kind of symbolize, you know, women embracing their economic power. Sometimes that high heel is sort of a symbol of feminine weakness, right? You've got the dainty damsel in distress who can't run as fast as the boys because she's wearing these high heels. And the idea is, let's change that. Let's flip that perception of what a high heel is all about and instead turn it into a symbol of feminine power.
All right, so I'm a man. Can I read this book, and what can I get out of this book? Can I run my business with style and sass?
Absolutely. And what's been most fun about writing this book is hearing the reactions of men. And they love it. I mean, the guys are all over this. I think men realize that women, one, think differently than they do. I mean, that's obvious. We all know that. We've known that for quite some time. That's why relationships can be such a challenge. But because But neither one is right or wrong. We just think of the world in a different way. We both have brilliance within us, and we can each gender can learn from the other. And so I think men are really intrigued about this idea of learning from women and women's take on business. You've seen a lot of women start businesses over the last 20, 30 years, and a lot of them hit some big success stories. So obviously we're doing something right, and there's definitely a different way that women run their organization than the way men tend to. So
let me interject something. What is the key differences between men running businesses and women running businesses? And then I have another follow-up question to that. But what's the difference between the two?
Well, one of the things that we've seen with the research is just the organizational structure. I mentioned at the beginning the idea of the leader being on the top of the organization and putting everybody else below him. And women actually tend to put themselves in the center of their organization and build their company around them. So they're less concerned with power levels, and they're more concerned with connection and relationships. That's one of the key differences. There's several others, but I think that's the one that stands out most for people. It's just the emphasis on connection and relationship with employees, with suppliers, with customers, because women tend to be connectors. It tends to be the lens that we view the world in. How are we all related? Whereas men are always kind of climbing for more power. Women are less concerned with power and more concerned with everybody being happy, with fulfilling and satisfying everybody's needs. We're kind of the nurturers, right? That comes with the maternal instinct. So those are some of the differences that I've been able to observe.
Does that mean with the unique differences that men and women have in running their businesses that there are certain industries that are better served with women versus men? Or what are your thoughts
on that? I don't think so. Not necessarily. I think it's just a matter of having a little bit of a different leadership style. Women tend to go into service-based businesses more so than men do. So things like consulting or healthcare, where they're actually providing a service. And so that sometimes is a challenge because it's oftentimes more difficult to scale a service-based business than it is, say, a product-based business. Because what you're selling at the end of the day is the efforts of people. And people want to go home at the end of the night, right? Whereas you can sell product 24/7, it's more difficult to do that with people. But it's not impossible to scale a service-based organization. You look around and there's thousands of extremely successful, very large, very profitable service-based companies. But you do need to have the right tools and the right formula in mind for how to do that. So I think there is a difference in the types of businesses they tend to start and the way that they organize and structure them, but I think that men and women are equally capable in both types of companies and in any type of a company.
Okay, so we've got a little bit less than 5 minutes to go here. So what does it mean when you say put your business in higher heels?
The idea is just to think bigger. One of the things that I've noticed is that women tend to not have quite a big enough vision for their company. A lot of times their end goal is just to make enough money to get by or, you know, to have a decent life. And that's a fine goal, but it's not a very big goal. And starting a business is a lot of work, first of all. So if you're not going to build a company that ultimately is going to function without you as the sole doer of the work, it's almost not worth all the effort. I mean, you're going to put some long days in. You're going to take some financial risk. You're going to experience a lot of stress. It's difficult to build a company. So you might as well dream big and think big. And so I think putting your business in higher heels first starts with having a big vision, not being like, I'm going to sit around in flats all day, but no, I really want to rise to the top of my field. I really want to be a leader in the niche that I've chosen for my organization. And I really want to have high profits as well. I don't want to just get by. I want to build a company that's going to be highly profitable with that revenue line pointing up and to the right, sharply to the right. Up.
Absolutely.
I think it starts with that.
What about the initial reactions to your book? How's that been?
It's been wonderful. All of the reviews have been sensational, and people have said things like, this is the Bible for lady entrepreneurs, this is a masterpiece, so it's been terrific to hear the reactions. And also people think it's really funny, and it's great because I obviously wanted the humor to come across and to make it really have an impact that way as well,
yeah.
And it's definitely done that. So the reactions have been extremely positive, and we're getting a lot of exposure. I think society is ready to hear this side of the picture. What is the feminine approach to entrepreneurship? I mean, women are starting more and more businesses. They're exiting corporate America and deciding to really chart their own path and embrace their economic power. But some their profits still are lagging behind that of their male counterparts, and this is an essential guide for helping them to really build a business with a solid strategy in mind, and not just create a bigger job for themselves at the end of the day, but build a company that they ultimately can sell or take a smaller role in and just be the chairman and come in and visit once a week and then do what they really want to do with the rest of their life and use it as a powerful economic tool.
Now, you, I look at your background. You've been on with the board of directors of the National Association for Women Business Owners, the was the American Association for University Women, and you also host the publicity show, a radio show. And you, what, magna cum laude, Wake Forest University, and you've got the BS degree in business, and you've got a master's degree in marketing from Georgia State University. Do people need to have the connections and the education to be successful in business? Is that
That's a great question. I think that you do not need necessarily the formal education, but I think you do need a lot of knowledge. And you don't necessarily need to have all of those doors at the top open for you, but you do need to connect with the right people. So there's not a, you know, secret formula, and you can't buy into the secret club or anything like that. But paying attention to how much knowledge you have and how much information you're exposing yourself to and how you're using that information on a daily basis is important. I think that having more information and more education, whether it's formal or informal, is always a good thing. And having more connections with people is always a good thing. But it doesn't necessarily mean you need to belong to some fancy club where you're meeting all these great people. Just put yourself out there. Be genuine. Be authentic to you. Don't try and be anyone else. Really find you and who you really are. And I think that the more I have embraced my authenticity and my real self, the more success that has come to me. And all of those things that you listed were all points in my life where I really looked inside and followed what my intuition was saying at my heart. And, you know, bringing up intuition, that's one of those other hidden secret female weapons that we have. I mean, everybody has intuition, but it's long been regarded that women have a stronger sense of intuition. And I think to be a business leader, you need to be able to make those tough gut decisions and listen to what your heart is saying, because oftentimes the answers are within. You just have to have the courage to listen to them, hear the message, and then really act on it.
Wow, wow. Very powerful message. Elizabeth Gordon, thanks for being on the program. Flourishing
Absolutely.
Business. How do we reach you? What's your website address?
My company website is flourishingbusiness.com, and you can find out more about the consulting and advisory services that we provide. And then I would also say check out the Chic Entrepreneur website as well, which is chicentrepreneur.com. And there's a lot of fun information on there. We actually do a Chic Tips newsletter that comes out, and you can sign up for that and be part of the Chic community. And we've also got a Flourishing Business newsletter that you can sign up for, and all of that is free. So I'm really big on sharing information and educating people about the new trends and insights and best practices that I come across in my journey, and I like to share that and build the community. So I would love to have more people sign up and be part of our community. We're doing some great things.
All right, then. And let me, if we could kind of summarize, what do you want our listeners to get out of this conversation that we've had?
I think it's important to, once again, address your unique value to the marketplace. Oftentimes when you get caught up in the day-to-day stuff of what it takes to run a business, you get more distanced from that solid core, and remind yourself, what is that real unique value? And make sure, like you said, you know, what are the 10 ways that it's unique? Make sure you're really doing something that's solidly different. And then also make sure that that difference is going to lead you to a sustainable cash flow model. That's really key. It's great to be different, but unless it's leading to cash flow, it's not a real business, right? It's just an idea, and you're just doing something interesting. We really want to encourage people to build a real company. So value, cash flow, and then, you know, find your authentic connection with yourself and move forward from there.
All right, then. Thank you very much. And your websites again, for your company and your book?
FlourishingBusiness.com and Chic Entrepreneur, that's C-H-I-C, Entrepreneur.com.
Not Chic.
Not Chic.
All right. So
we'll take
so
Chic, but we'll take dudes as well. So.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering if I could sign up for the email.
Absolutely. We're happy to have, we have lots of men in our community, and I think they're having a good time with it as well.
All right. I wish my mother would have had this book. Maybe it could have benefited her life, because I always thought she could be a business person and things would have been good. So, but I will encourage everybody to get the book. Absolutely. I'm going to go get the book. In my high heels, I'll read it. Anyway, thank you so very much, Elizabeth Gordon, and do come back.
My pleasure, Ken. Thanks for having me.
All right. So that was Elizabeth Gordon. Get the book, The Chic Entrepreneur. All right, and so that's the show. Question I want to ask you guys is that, what have you learned today? More importantly, how are you going to apply what you've learned? Specifically, what action steps will you implement to improve your business and increase your profitability? If you're looking for a second opinion or to maximize your business opportunity, call Liz, where she's here for you. Go ahead and get the book and visit her website, www.flourishingbusiness.com. So, again, that is the show. We really appreciate you listening in, taking some time. We want to, again, say excellent, dare to be great, be remarkable, be extraordinary, and above all, stay profitable. Thank you, Brian Hunley, for your music of New Wine Music. Take us out. ¶¶